This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
So he mentioned it being a little warm, and then he said, well, this is preparing for missions. So what he didn't realize was this was part of the program for the class today, preparing for missions. I've taught in Haiti in July, and this isn't anywhere close to Haiti in July. So this is part of your preparation. Prepare to endure. Preparing for missions is the title. And as you see up here on the screen, zeal is admirable. So we're here at the missions conference, and we hear a lot of sessions about going, and we need to take the light to the darkness, powerful message this morning, and we get fired up and we're going to go. We need to do this. We're going to accomplish this. And that's great. That is certainly admirable and something that I certainly want to promote. And there are a lot of zealous people in Scripture or otherwise. So who are some of the people that you think of when you think of zeal? Paul. Hey, he was zealous. Destroying the church, persecuting the church, right? God turned him around, and he also became zealous for the gospel, unashamed of the gospel of Christ. Who else? Peter. Those are usually first two that come up, Peter and Paul. Again, God got a hold of him and used his zeal for his glory. Anybody else you want to mention with zeal?
Jim Elliott.
Jim Elliott.
Cameron Townsend.
Okay. Mary Slessor. What was that one again?
Cameron Townsend.
Cameron Townsend. Just repeat it. Who else? Okay. So, zeal. Is God stirring your heart for ministry? If so, you're not alone. 1,900 people here today. You're not alone. God is calling thousands into the world, to go into the world, whether Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, or the uttermost parts of the world. And so we are in good company if we have a zeal for the gospel and a zeal for ministries. Maybe your passion or calling is for the nations. Maybe it's for your local church, kids club, town nearby, wherever it may be. The fact that you are here today indicates that you have a desire to be involved and to make a difference in the world. And there is indeed unprecedented need and opportunity and capability for ministry. As the song says, there's work for the aged, work for the young. There's work for us all and excuses for none. There's work for the feeble and work for the strong. There's something for all to do. So zeal to do the work. It's very good, very powerful. But while zeal is commendable, I would suggest that proper preparation will help prevent an early death of ministry. And throughout the PowerPoint, I have the blanks on the handout underlined to help you connect those. Zeal is commendable and certainly needed, and certainly part of the package, but proper preparation will help prevent an early death of ministry through burnout, interpersonal conflict, and other things. So cleansing, maturity, character, a clear call developed in the womb of worship are significant aspects of the journey of preparation. And I just came from a session. They were talking about the refugee crisis. I don't know how many of you were down there. They talked about having a high school diploma, GED, or medical training as an RN or whatever. Those are valuable parts of preparation. And sometimes what we think about when we talk about preparation. But what I'd like to talk about today actually goes a little bit deeper than that. Training ground of preparation. So there are preparation or there are checklists of preparation. Sometimes you look at books, preparing for ministry or whatever. So there's checklists, there's self-assessments for global work, to-do lists, timelines of preparation if you're thinking about ministry. But Cindy Judge, in her book, Before You Pack Your Bag, Prepare Your Heart, says, positive life change occurs in direct proportion to how prepared you are. No doubt you have a lot to do before you go, but a prepared heart should be the number one priority on your list. And so that's what I'm planning to talk about, is not so much all the to-do lists. You can find those, and you can work through those specific to wherever you want to get involved. What I'd like to talk about more is a preparation of heart. For a background and a text for that, I'd like to take us to Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah chapter 6. This is part of Isaiah's preparation for ministry. It says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one called to another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the foundations of the thresholds shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me. And he said, go. And then it follows with some of the details of what was going to be a very difficult calling for Isaiah, which he followed faithfully until his martyr's death, when according to tradition, he was sawn asunder in a hollow log. He carried out his calling faithfully until death. But I think the reason he was able to do that was because of the preparation that came with it. So the first thing I would observe from this passage is that Isaiah saw the Lord. Isaiah saw the Lord. He caught a glimpse of who God really is. Not what Isaiah had created him to be. Okay, that's an important distinction. Seeing God for who he really is, not who we've created him to be. Because we do tend to create God according to our own experiences, our perspectives, our interpretations. But to push past that and really see God for who he is. That's what happened to Isaiah. A.W. Tozer says, what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. That's probably my single most used quote. If you come to SMBI and you take classes or sit in chapel, you're probably going to hear that somewhere. You've already heard it, but you'll hear it again. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. So what comes into your mind when you think about God? How do you get there? How do you even know what comes into your mind when you think about God? The essence of idolatry is the entertainment of thoughts about God that are unworthy of him. We're guilty of idolatry. If we're going to enter into sustainable ministry, we have to reshape our view of God. The heaviest obligation upon the Christian church today is to purify and elevate her concept of God until it is once more worthy of Him. There's another quote I put there in the middle. The man who comes to a right belief about God is relieved of 10,000 temporal problems. Yesterday we were talking about problems in ministry. Took a class, leading when your ship springs a leak. Right? Well, right view of God is going to shape how we respond to that. And he talked about that. He talked about believing truth and facts, rooting our response in facts. The man who comes to a right belief about God is relieved of 10,000 temporal problems. Anybody here have any problems in life? Okay, I see a couple of you have at least one problem, and it's honesty. But yes, we all have struggles. Tozer suggests that at least part of the solution to that is a right view of God. Worship. Isaiah saw God sitting on a throne, high and lifted up. His train filling the temple. The seraphim, holy, holy, holy. The whole earth is full of His glory. It was an overwhelming presence and, I think, experience for him. What would that be like to see and to experience that vision that Isaiah had of God? Amazing. Amazing experience. With this idea of worship, Samuel Zwemer, missionary to the Islamic world, he said this: the chief end of missions is not the salvation of men, but the glory of God. If we want to get involved in ministry of any kind, children's ministry, SMBI, foreign missions, we have to make sure it's about the glory of God. That anchors, provides a foundation for our ministry, creates a foundation for sustainable ministry. If it's something different than that, I think we're going to be vulnerable to burnout, to discouragement. What happens if it's about salvation of men and you've been in Timbuktu for 5 years and your ministry's not going much of anywhere? You know, pack your bags and go back home if you last 5 years. Okay. But if it's about the glory of God, that's kind of secondary. Second quote there: the first avenue of preparation for whatever God has next for us in any area of life, a first avenue of preparation for whatever God has next. How many of you are still in high school? Okay. Did you take that what's next after graduation class? Just a couple of you did? Okay, well, I'm going to give you a little bit of advice. Okay, the first avenue of preparation for whatever God has next in life, even if it's graduating from high school, is to expand and correct our view of God and learn to worship. Isaiah's vision shook the foundations of the temple. An earthquake in that vision. The glory of God shook the foundations of the temple. And I think it'll shake ours also when we glimpse the glory of God. I think it'll shake the foundations of our life, glimpsing the glory of God. It also creates the foundation for the second thing that I observe, and that is that Isaiah was cleansed. Okay, when Isaiah got a picture of who God is, His holiness. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord. His natural response was, "Woe is me. I'm done." The translation I had in your notes there was, "I am lost." King James says, "I am undone. I am a man of unclean lips." He was humbled in the process. But he was cleansed. Another quote from Samuel Zwemer. He says, "I feel now that Arabia could easily be evangelized in the next 30 years were it not for the wicked selfishness of Christians." Now, he died in 1952. He said that he thought it could happen in the next 30 years. That's a long past. Has the Islamic world been evangelized? Does that suggest that there's still too much wicked selfishness among the Christian world? Isaiah got a glimpse of who God was, and then he was cleansed. Confession and repentance. A couple of specific areas going out of Isaiah now, but a couple of specific areas for cleansing. I'm going to go to Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' teaching. I teach Sermon on the Mount. Very much enjoy this passage. But Jesus, I think, gives us some things to think about here in preparation for ministry, specifically in cleansing. First is relationships. I don't know about you, but I put that up on the screen, it's going to like, I have some relationships that struggle. Okay. Relationships. Jesus said, "If you bring your gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." The number one reason that people come home from the mission field is not cultural struggle, or it's too hot, or it's too cold, or they don't like the food, or there's too many mosquitoes, or whatever else. Number one reason that people give up on ministry, both at home and abroad, is interpersonal relationships. Yesterday, Brian Martin had a session, I don't know what the exact title was, but relationship problem solving. There were about, I don't know, probably 250 people, 300 people in that session. It says something about relationships, right? Relationship problem solving. A little later, I went to another session, something about developing positive relationships in ministry or something like that. Interesting, there were only about 20 people there. I was like, this is interesting. You know, we do a session on developing positive relationships, and hardly anybody goes, but problem solving, we all show up. Maybe if we do a little bit of positive relationship building first, we would have a few less problems to solve. And maybe if we did a little more preparation, relationship building preparation, and developing our relationship skills, we would experience a little better success in our ministry as well. Philippians 2 says that we take on the mind of Christ. We practice and give ourselves to the same mind of Christ, a mind of humility. Mind of humility. Without this mind and attitude, who's going to know that we're the followers? Jesus said, people are going to know that you're my disciples, what? Yeah. When they see how you love one another. What do they see in our families, in our churches, in our ministry teams, Do they see how we sacrificially love one another? Immediately after this, Jesus talks about sexual purity. You have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. Whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Preparation is, you know, getting your GED. Amen, right? Educate yourself. Do some cultural exposure. Amen. But we've got to take care of the basics. Sexual purity has to be a part of our preparation for ministry. Third is misguided motivations and loyalties. Go into chapter 6. And there's more here in the Sermon on the Mount, but chapter 6 talks about taking heed that you do not your alms before men to be seen of them, otherwise they have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. That word alms there, I take to mean more than just putting your money in the offering. It's kind of your righteous acts. And he addresses three specific things of Jewish piety in the next verses. He talks about giving specifically alms. He talks about prayer, and he talks about fasting. And he talks about them specifically in the context of our motivations for doing these things. Jesus is all for giving, right? Jesus is all for praying. He's all for fasting. Those are all good things. But what he specifically is concerned about is why. Why are we doing those things? John just had a session in the main auditorium about our identity. Do we get our identity out of performance? Or do we get our identity in Christ? Our misguided motivations can trip us up. They can do strange things to us. And he talked about some of that. And we're driven. Can't say no. Or lots of other things when our identity is in the wrong places. So purifying, cleansing our motivations and loyalties is part of preparation for any ministry. If it's your local kids club, if it's on the other side of the world, misguided loyalties in cleansing those, bringing those in line with Christ. Next one is misplaced security. We kind of know it as a passage where Jesus is saying, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, what you shall drink, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. Behold the fowls of the air, they sow not, neither do they reap nor gather into barns. Okay, we can have our securities in a lot of things other than money and finances. You've been sitting here too long. What are some of the things that we can put our securities in besides finances?
Background.
Food.
People.
Job.
Insurance.
Education. You've been to SMBI and graduated. Now I can go do this, right? Or did the Faith Builders TAP or general studies or whatever. We can do this, right? If that's how we come out of our education, or that's okay, we've got misplaced security. Of ourselves, we can do what?
Nothing.
In Christ, we can do all things. Okay. Misplaced security. In regard to education, one of my goals in teaching is that my students leave my classes knowing less than when they came. There's a student right there. They're like, I think they've heard me say that. But when I say that, they often look at me kind of like, what? We paid money to come here? But really, we shouldn't. The more we learn, the more we should be aware of how much we don't know. Okay? If we think we kind of know it all and kind of got it all together, you may as well stay home. Okay? You're just going to cause problems. Okay? Misplaced securities. Education can be one of them. Am I in favor of education? How long did he say I've been doing educating? 25 years, right? So am I in favor of education? Yeah, I'm in favor of education. Vital part of preparation. You should sign up to come to SMBI tomorrow, okay? I'm in favor of education, but we have to keep it in the right place. Misplaced securities, that's only one of them. So there's plenty more. Next one that I'll pick up is beginning of chapter 7. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. Do we need to be discerning people? Yeah, we need to learn how to make judgments. Okay, judgment is not a bad word. But what he's talking about in this context is a critical spirit. Okay, critical spirit just causes so much trouble. Even if you're not going anywhere, okay, we need to get rid of a critical spirit because it causes a lot of trouble right in their home church, right in your own family, okay, if we have a critical spirit. Cleansing. First of all, Isaiah saw the Lord. He understood who he was. Okay? He knew less after that experience than when he started, right? So he understood how undone he was and understood himself and others in the context of who God was. And then that was followed with cleansing. The angel brought the coals, touched his lips. Another one that I've listed here that's not drawn from the Sermon on the Mount, but maybe in some ways summarizes these, is emotional health. Frank Reed says many times that wounded people wound others. Okay, wounded people wound others. And it's like, well then, who's qualified to go anywhere, right? None of us are perfect. I understand that. Okay, but to the degree that we move toward emotional health, spiritual health, we're free to work with other people, to speak into other people's lives, and to do God's work. To the degree that we're bound with emotional wounds, bound with these other things that we put on the screen, it hinders our work. And it's going to make us vulnerable to burnout. Next thing I observe, going back to Isaiah, is that he heard. He heard the call. Isaiah heard. Says Shema, to hear intelligently, often with the implication of attention and obedience. I have 5 children, ages 1 to 12. And sometimes I'm talking to them, and I want them to listen. And they say, yeah, I heard. I heard what you said. I'm like, no, you didn't hear. Okay. Maybe they were listening. Maybe they heard, they picked up the voice, the sound waves, okay? But they didn't really hear because it wasn't done intelligently with an implication of attention and obedience, okay? Isaiah heard what God said, and he responded to that. Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? The harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Cultivate a habit of hearing. If you're still in high school, cultivate a habit of hearing. Hearing teachers, hearing parents, hearing pastors. Wasn't there just a session about listening to, what was the title? Something about submission, right? Anybody was just in that? Okay, cultivate this habit of hearing, of listening, of surrendering cultivate that habit. We need to practice that. It doesn't come naturally, but we need to practice that habit of hearing the voice of the Lord. And Isaiah responded, "Here am I, send me." Here am I, send me. True humility in the presence of God will not hinder us from responding to his call. I'm going to push a little bit on a cultural tendency that we have. We tend to not be a culture that volunteers readily for certain things. Right? For example, if I were to say, you know, could somebody lead a song for us? Come up front here and lead a song for us. Some of you may be legitimately reluctant, but there's probably some of you that are song leaders that could do very well. It's like, we tend maybe not to put ourselves out. Okay, we're taught to kind of hold back. We're taught to be humble. We're taught to let somebody else toot our horn for us, right? Okay, but true humility, I think we would agree that Isaiah experienced true humility here in this passage. But it did not hinder him from volunteering. God says, "Hey, I need somebody to go." Isaiah was, "Here am I. I'm ready. Send me." So let's not always be too scared to volunteer for stuff. Put up a sign-up sheet to do summer Bible school? Hey, sign up. Get involved. It's not an act of pride to volunteer to teach summer Bible school. True humility will not hinder us from responding to his call. So Isaiah says, "Here am I." The Hebrew there is kind of is often translated "behold." He's like, "Look." But sometimes we kind of use this catchphrase, pick me," right? He's like, "Look, behold, here am I." And the word "send me" is that Hebrew word there, which is, I'm just going to give you a couple other places it's used, shalak or something like that. But Genesis 3:22, God removed them from the garden, removed Adam and Eve from the garden, lest he put forth his hand and eat of the tree. And the next verse says God sent him out of the garden. Now, how did God send them out of the garden? I don't know exactly what that looks like, but he kind of kicked them out, right? He's like, "Get out. Get out of the garden." It's used in Genesis 8 when Noah sent out the raven. And then he sent out the dove. And he put forth his hand and brought it back again. He sent it out. So I'm not sure what all this means here in the Hebrew. I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but I would conclude here that Isaiah's response is strongly stated. Strongly stated would be the word that I would use. So it's not one of resignation or dread, kind of like, I guess, you know, if you need somebody to go, I can go. No, but he was excited about it. One of enthusiasm, and we're back around to our word zeal, right? Zeal. There was zeal in his response. One of excitement and vision. He wanted to go, and he was prepared to go because he had gone through a process of preparation. So, preparing for ministry. Prepare ye the way of the Lord. Lots of good things to do in preparation. We already talked a little bit about education, mission strategies, current trends, missions history, biographies, autobiographies. How many of you enjoy reading biographies and autobiographies, particularly missions? Okay. Good number of you. That's great training, great preparation. Getting a degree in something, particularly if you're interested in foreign missions, can be very powerful powerful tool, access tool, to gain access to closed countries. Cross-cultural training, exposure, traveling, doing some short-term missions. It's a great, great opportunity. Maybe just a caution with short-term missions. Again, I'm not opposed to short-term missions. We offer a short-term program of our own called WATER, in cooperation with about a third of the missions here. So I'm not opposed to short-term missions. At the same time, I was talking to another mission leader here a couple weeks ago, and he's been involved in debriefing after people come back from their short-term missions. And he's like, you know, what have you been seeing? What have you been experiencing? He said, especially the last couple years, he's kind of getting the feeling that this is just another thing to check off. You know, they come and do this one, and they've already been overseas, and they've traveled to this country and that country, and it's like the more countries you can get stamped in your passport, you know, kind of the better it is, and the more preparation, prestige it gives you. I've been to 19 countries. And I was like, I wasn't sure about this. Like, what's going on? So cross-cultural training and exposure is great. I think it's a powerful opportunity that you have. Back to our motivations, right? Why are we doing this short-term stuff? And I don't have this on the PowerPoint, not a part of the presentation, but I think one of the challenges for us right now is commitment. Okay, commitment. To commit to something and do it. We like to do 6 weeks, 2 weeks here, a couple months over there. But even committing to a year or two is difficult. And longer than that is even more difficult. You know, to actually give your life to something. I think that's being promoted, and I think we're making some progress on that. Not sure where all that comes from culturally. Have some ideas about that, but just think about that. Preparation. We're cultivating commitment and dedication. Discovering spiritual gifts, etc. Lots of things that we can do to prepare. Prepare ye the way of the Lord in our lives. We got close to 10 minutes left. Is that right? Okay, great. I'm usually longer-winded rather than shorter, so surprise myself. But we have time for some discussion. What are your questions or comments, your observations? What do you want to say about preparing for missions? Or questions that you have?
A question. I missed the blanks in the last paragraph.
Okay, we'll do that in conclusion.
Okay.
Yeah. Someone else? Yeah.
You have here to have cross-cultural training and exposure.
Mm-hmm.
What would be some recommended avenues?
Okay. Great. We have we can pull that from our group here. What are some recommended avenues for cross-cultural exposure and training?
Send one?
Is that a program? Okay, say more about it.
It's done by Charity Missions.
Okay.
It's a 3-month program with intensive training on missions and get cross-cultural experience in Chicago.
Okay. Send One, operated by the Charity Christian Missions. I already mentioned the WATER program there at SMBI. Great opportunity spend a week on campus in training and classes. Merle Burkholder comes and does about 3 sessions for us. And good week there on campus, and then you can choose. 35 locations this year to choose from all over the world. Other ideas for cross-cultural exposure?
Or get to know your neighbors.
Get to know your neighbors. How many of you have someone, a neighbor that's would be a cross-cultural experience? I should probably see everybody's hand unless all your neighbors are Mennonite. Okay? Because if you relate to someone down the street that's not Mennonite, that's cross-cultural. Being Mennonite is kind of cultural, in case you didn't know that. So cross-cultural experience like that. Someone else?
I think serving somewhere in like some of these missions that maybe don't look quite as glamorous. I mean, they are places where you actually have to relate closely with other Mennonite cultures. For instance, though, for us living with someone for, for a year, working with them is really good training.
Okay. So starting off with something that's kind of safe cross-cultural, but it's when you go to Hillcrest and you bring a whole host of young people from all over the United States, it's cross-cultural.
IGO can carry that.
IGO? Okay. IGO has some great opportunities. Any books you would recommend? Anybody?
Shadow of the Almighty by Elizabeth Elliot.
Okay.
About Jim Elliot's life and testimony.
Shadow of the Almighty by Elizabeth Elliot. I saw some down, I don't remember the titles, but I saw some down on the recommended bookshelf related to cross-cultural things. Coming up later, I forget when it was, but the Muslim Impact seminar here in right here in Lancaster later this year. Do some stuff like that. Get involved. Okay, so some ideas. Another question, or what do you think of when you think of preparation? Yeah, this is kind of the track I went down, but there's a whole lot of things to think about in preparation. So maybe you have something else.
You mentioned earlier among ourselves.
Okay. Love for people. What's the old saying? People don't care how much you know. Until
they know how much you care.
They know how much you care. Yeah. And again, where do you cultivate that? Right at home.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we think when we climb in a silver tube and fly for 8 hours, somehow we're going to get off a different person than we were. And the reason I'm talking about the kinds of preparation that I did is because you're going to take yourself along, and who you were at home and how you related and the things that you struggled with and whatever, and take that right along with you.
So how do you get the courage to do that at home?
Okay. Courage to do what?
Well, I want to be a missionary, but to actually reach out to my neighbors is, I think sometimes it's harder to do it at home.
Okay.
Not discounting what you're saying, but
mm-hmm.
I feel this desire. I want to reach out to my neighbors, and yet it's scary.
Okay. So how do we develop that courage to reach out? Okay. He said, come back to Isaiah 6. Experience Isaiah 6. Okay. What else?
If you pray, there'll be opportunities that
mm-hmm.
help you overcome fear and help match.
Okay.
My uncle's a missionary, and he said about when they do missionaries that it's not any easier to witness like overseas than at home. So if you're okay. not going to witness at home, you won't witness overseas.
Okay. So prayer and back to practicing it at home. I think one of the aspects of that is practice. Elijah teaches a class on personal evangelism. Actually, as Phil Beiler, second term, was teaching class on personal evangelism. And they actually do hands-on stuff. They get out and talk to people, and people are they're kind of scared about this. But then when they actually go out on the street and do it with some training and background, some work and things, questions to ask, and okay, that's part of preparation. That's good. And maybe that's part of developing that courage is some training. But what they also discovered is it wasn't as scary as they thought it would be. You know, they're just normal people like everybody else, and you can strike up a conversation with somebody. We had a fascinating little 45-second conversation with a TSA agent at the airport the other week, just checking us through, checking our passports and ID and whatnot. You can strike up a little conversation. I think it had to, he said something about you kids have a good day, and we said, well, we left our kids at home and had this little conversation, family-oriented conversation. And it wasn't that scary, even though he was a TSA agent. Just normal conversation. Other ideas?
Like, part of the reason might be because when I talk to my neighbor, I know I'm going to see him again, and
okay,
I have to live up to what I'm talking about.
Ah.
So, and then sometimes it's a little scary to say something.
Okay. So if we talk to our neighbors, they see us. They know us. They know how we live.
I'd say develop a close relationship with God.
Okay.
I find the days that I don't see opportunities, or I see opportunities but don't feel like I have the ability of taking them,
mm-hmm,
I look back and I'm like, I was too busy to take them with God, so therefore I didn't have anything to give.
Mm-hmm. So developing a good relationship with God kind of brings us back to the idea that he who comes to a right belief about God or relationship with God is relieved of 10,000 temporal problems, one of them being fear. Yeah. Okay, time is winding down, so here's our last paragraph. Lots of things in preparation. Lots of good things. Lots of study, lots of going places. But I'd suggest that there's a deeper foundation of preparation that's found in worship, cleansing, and embracing God's call upon which we must build. Okay, if you have a doctor's degree and you're missing some of these, I don't think you're prepared. I don't think you're prepared. These are foundational. If we have these kinds of foundations, it'll see us through the thick of life. And so it's going to be thick some days. There's going to be some conflicts, even if you prepare for that and you work through your relational conflicts. There's going to be some conflicts. There's going to be discouragement. There's going to be days when it's hot and days when it's cold and days when you don't feel like it. But if we have these foundations, seeing God, worship, preparation of heart, cleansing of our motivations, etc., it will see us through the thick of life, and one day it will be said, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of thy Lord. And I think that's what Isaiah heard when he was sawn asunder, and he went into the next life. I don't know how all the afterlife works, but whether he heard it then or whether that's yet coming, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord, and may you experience that as well as you prepare for whatever is next in your life. Whether it's graduating from high school, congratulations, coming up, or whether you're somewhere further down the road. Turn it back to Marshall.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.